Paul, and the next morning before you can depart, Namir comes to your door. He opens it, then knocks. Excuse me, Paul.
Yes, Master.
I just wanted to ask how things are going with Milton. I heard that you left the temple the other day. I thought you'd be excited to have a master. You'd be practicing all day long.
Yeah, but, I did. I practiced quite a lot.
I just want to make sure you're not sore with me or nothing. I mean, I did ask absolutely everyone, but, you know, everybody already had a student picked out. I mean, they put their eyes on someone, and we have been waiting a long time, and they didn't realize that you were up for grabs this year.
It's fine. Milton is, he's a step above me in terms of the rankings, so this
Milton
is fair.
Milton did say that he was worried you were taking it out on him a little bit, though.
Really? I've been nothing but respectful.
Well, not by being disrespectful. He just says you're hitting the mitts especially hard.
Well, I'm supposed to hit the mitts. It's practice, right?
I know. Don't get defensive, Paul.
I'm not being defensive. I just hit the mitts. It's fine.
I understand. I'm just saying, maybe when you train with Milton, focus on technique and not on trying to take the boy's hands off, okay?
Fine. Yes. I mean, of course. Sir. Thank you,
See,
Master.
Paul, that's exactly the kind of anger I'm talking about.
Yes, sir. We all have our own problems we have to work through.
You know, you can bring that up with Milton as well.
Thank you, sir. I will be aware of that.
We'll see that you are. All right, I'll catch you around, Paul. Let me know if you have any problems, though. I'm always open.
Thank you, sir. Okay, go and get my breakfast and try to get out of here before anyone else catches me.
Okay, as you're doing that. Elvis and Lowry, Milton approaches you guys while you're eating breakfast.
These are my eggs.
Hey, kid, you want to sit with us?
Oh, thanks, guys. Hey, you guys are Paul's friends, right?
Oh, we're more than just friends. We're partners.
Oh. Well, you'd come around suddenly. I guess that makes sense. I didn't know that catmen could be partners with manmen.
Oh, they can be. I'm also partners with Lowry here, and he's a lizard man.
I'm more like a mentor.
Well, they do say that the bonds between mentors and their students can become very strong, which is actually what I wanted to talk to you about. Do you guys feel like Paul is happy with me as his teacher?
I wouldn't be.
He actually hasn't talked about you.
Oh, not even a little bit?
Well, you know how it is. He's involved in a new relationship with us, and so he's all thinking about that.
Oh, I guess that makes sense. Should I be worried about that, though? Paul's supposed to be focused on his education, and if he's not learning from me, that'll reflect poorly on me as a teacher.
You know what? Why don't you talk to him about it? That's what a teacher does.
You're right. Okay.
Oh, but don't bring up the partnership. We're actually supposed to keep that on the down low.
Oh, well, thanks for sharing with me.
It's only because I forgot.
Oh.
You're welcome, though.
Okay. Milton wanders off. Paul, you come downstairs. Lowry and Elvis are already eating, and then Milton comes up to you as you're collecting your breakfast. Excuse me, Paul?
Good morning, Master.
I just wanted to talk to you about our training.
Yep, Namir already came by.
Oh, he did? He wasn't supposed to talk to you. I talked to him, but that was supposed to be a private conversation.
Yeah, well, it wasn't.
I'm really sorry about that. I wanted to talk to you about our teacher-student relationship.
Uh-huh.
I understand that you kind of are in a relationship with somebody.
I don't have another master, Milton.
I meant more like a pressing relationship outside of our own.
Exactly what are you talking about?
I mean, nothing. I'm just saying a master knows when his student is distracted, and I can tell that you're distracted. You know, you're thinking about other things. And it's important that, although Glute is the god of physical attainment, that you shouldn't get too wrapped up in the physical bodies of others.
Like what do you mean? Don't compare myself to others?
There's that. And also, remember not to be too covetous of the bodies of others.
Is this about you? Are you worried that I'm coveting your body?
Oh, no. If that were the problem, then well, that would be a completely different problem.
Okay, well, I'm totally lost. I have no interest in your body, Master.
That's all well and good. Thank you for this conversation. And then Milton walks off stiffly.
Oh my god. Okay, go sit down with Lowry and Elvis.
Your master's weird.
That's good, though. It means he's wise.
No, it doesn't. It means he's weird.
Lowry, how do you know if someone is inscrutable versus weird?
Well, you see, Elvis, simplicity is wisdom. And people sometimes think that's weird because everyone likes to overcomplicate things. So if you can cut straight to the heart of a matter, they might find that weird. But it's not weird. It's simple.
Like how when my uncle got kicked in the head by a horse, it made him simple?
You're simple. No, I mean, like, easy to understand, if you're not trying to understand it too hard.
You know, Lowry, that sounds an awful lot like the mindless application of faith.
Except what I'm teaching would come to you naturally if you would just observe the world, and you don't need someone else to tell you about it.
Boy, but I would never know what was going on if no one told me about it.
Well, some people need help. The simple people.
Gosh, you can say that twice. I don't think I've understood a single thing you've told me so far, but I am trying.
You know, it's the simple people who have it most figured out. I learn more from children than I learn from anybody else.
Now that I can believe, and it would explain a lot. So anyway, we're going to do this thing with Rutherford.
It is what you simpletons want, so that you can learn the harsh lesson that you are wrong.
So is it good that we're simple or bad?
It's good that you're simple, and unfortunate that you're too simple to realize how right you are about the things that you're not wrong about.
Okay.
I hate talking to you.
The sound of a man who hates the reflection in the mirror. So anyway, are we ready to go?
Yeah, let me just get all my things. Okay, all done.
Great, me too.
Oh, hang on, I got my sword, I got my shield. Oh, my shin guards, let me get my shin guards.
Elvis, I told you to be ready.
It's just my shin guards, give me a second.
Elvis goes to get his shin guards, and then when he's ready, you guys go down to the dungeon where you're meant to meet Rutherford. It's outside the same place where you saw the fog skeleton. You spot Rutherford there. He's dressed nicely. He's reading the newspaper, trying to look relatively inconspicuous by standing out. He sees you coming, then puts the newspaper down. Ah, hello! I don't suppose you gentlemen read the Curator Times?
I cannot read.
That's a shame. You know, a lot of people can't, but they should. My favorite is the funnies. There's this comic about a fat dog named Gerald, and he loves to eat his owner's food.
Oh, and let me guess. The dog does things that are unexpected, and those unexpected twists are hilarity.
Actually, no. The dog just eats his owner's food for pretty much every comic, and I like the consistency. It's a very inconsistent world we live in, gentlemen.
Can I read? I love the funnies. I love to read comics.
All yours, friend. Rutherford hands you the newspaper. Sure enough, in today's Gerald comic, his owner Jack says, "Now, Gerald, don't you eat my dinner." And then he walks away, and Gerald eats his dinner.
You can't trust a dog just by telling it not to eat your dinner.
I don't get what people would like about a comic about a dog. Dogs are scary.
He's not scary. Look how fat he is.
But they've got great big teeth, and they will bite you.
Gerald would only bite you if you were pot roast. Pot roast is his favorite. He loves pot roast.
Let me see that. Okay, see, look here. The dog's not really drawn to look like a dog. He's like a fat...
He's a cartoon!
But it's not a realistic-looking dog. The comedy is in how the dog looks.
I just like that Jack always trusts him not to eat his pot roast, but he always does.
Yes, this comic has been running for 5 years now, and every single day, Gerald eats Jack's pot roast. There's never any other punchline. What a treat. Anyway, speaking of things working like clockwork, I'm glad you're all here on time. We don't want to run into an official delving. So, first thing I need to ask is, how many times have you been down into the dungeon?
One time.
Never.
All right, then. Rutherford gets out some keys, flips through them, and then opens the lock on the door. After you, gentlemen. I'll explain on the way. Once you're all inside, he shuts the door and locks it, and then he begins to walk. Now, I would love to ramble on about the history of this place, but let's focus on the things that we need to know right now. As you are likely already aware, the dungeon is full of many magical devices which can summon creatures from a little crystal on a pedestal. We don't really know how it works, but we are trying to understand. Reliably, every 8 hours or so, just as trustworthy as Gerald the dog, those crystals regenerate and will summon a new creature. But it's always the same creature. It never deviates. So, running into a fog skeleton, as the two of you did, is completely unusual and unheard of.
That is a relief to hear. I still have night terrors about it. Sometimes when I close my eyes, I see Timio melting. Or whatever his name was.
His name was Tammy.
Was it? I don't remember.
It was definitely Tammy.
Well, I remember how he looked. Like gelatin.
So the guild rather likes this regularity, just as much as we like our funny comics. A skeleton is always summoned with an iron sword. You destroy the skeleton. You melt the iron sword down. You sell the iron. Wonderful, except the passage of time is slowly degrading the dungeon. The pieces stop working, we don't know why. We don't know where the skeletons come from. We don't know why iron swords. Why not gold? The guild would certainly be thrilled if it were gold, I'll tell you that.
Well, if they all came with gold swords, wouldn't the price of gold crash because there'd be so much of it?
It would, which is why the price of iron in this town is also crashed, because iron swords are the easiest thing to get, and we melt them down by the hundreds.
Boy, they're lucky they're not bronze.
Very astute, Elvis.
Thank you, I am a student.
Funny, isn't it, how a thing that was once valuable becomes worthless once it's over common?
And yet I still laugh at Gerald the dog every single day.
Wait, that because
dog gives me the willies. I
you...
hate that dog.
Don't try to explain it. We don't know why anyone likes Gerald the dog. It is just a formula that works. No one has been able to replicate it. Isn't that interesting? Frustrating, even. Although, you know what I bet you could do? What if you decided to draw Gerald the dog? But you gave him a knife, and then he stabbed Jack to death.
That would be a terrible Gerald the Dog comic.
Is that how it ends? That's how the series ends, isn't it?
The series doesn't end, friend. What I'm saying is that you could aberrate Gerald the dog. That's easy enough. Destruction is possible. What do you know about magic?
It's fake.
Fake?
Yes. Smoke and mirrors and tricks and hidden wires.
As a practiced mage myself, I am curious how you came to that decision.
Watch. No magic. No fire. Clearly fake.
Well, you'll never summon fire by just snapping your fingers. It's like this, I shall demonstrate. Rutherford holds up his fingers and runes faintly glow in the sky. He twists and he turns and he rotates them around till he gets them just right, all of this within about a second, and then snaps, and fire briefly erupts from his hands. There you are.
I know that one. You use flash paper.
Flash paper? Did you not see the magical runes?
I saw what you wanted me to see.
Yes, which was a bona fide demonstration of magic. Look, we're not going to get anywhere if we don't even agree that magic exists.
I believe in magic.
Yes, I also believe in magic, so let's move on.
One time one of my friends at school sold me an invisible fairy in a bottle, but I forgot to put holes in the top of the jar and it died.
How do you know you killed it if it was invisible?
Well, it wouldn't grant my wishes, and when I complained to my friend, he explained that I'd killed it. I cried for weeks.
See? You were tricked. There's no invisible fairy.
But then why weren't my wishes granted?
How does he know he caught the fairy and put it in the jar?
Who would sell an empty jar? That's crazy.
Anyway, task at hand. Well, I can't prove that there's no invisible fairy. I can prove that I can make fire. Let's call it magic, shall we? I'm also very adept at healing. Pray that you don't have to see me do both. At any rate, the skepticism isn't entirely misplaced. Magic is a highly emotional affair. You have to get the runes just right, and to get them there, you have to feel it. It's said that no two spells are exactly alike for that reason. It's artisanal. Magical devices are exactly the same way. Throughout the ages, many lords have commissioned flaming swords, but the manner in which they're made is different every time. The burning blade of Orda is mechanically nothing alike the flaming sword of Tarda. You can imagine how this might confound the study of an entire structure laden with these kinds of magical artifacts. Even if you came to understand the mechanisms of one, you wouldn't understand the next one. And imagine some adventurer came down into this place and broke one of the pillars that you were studying.
Or what if they just pried off the gem from one and ate it?
Why would you suggest that?
What would happen if that happened, though?
What would happen if someone ate one of the gemstones?
Yes, hypothetically, let's suppose that someone ate one of the gemstones.
We are not hypothetically discussing the gemstone in the first room up here that was missing after the fog skeleton incident, are we?
No, that was probably already eaten before I got there.
Okay. I do not know what would happen if you ate one of the gemstones.
Well, guess what? The answer is probably nothing.
Did you eat a gemstone?
No.
Well, great. If you happen to know someone who ate one of the gemstones, at least keep me abreast of that. I'd like to know what does happen.
Probably just stays in your gizzard, you know, smashing up food, like rocks do.
Okay, great. New rule, don't eat the gemstones. That's an old rule, by the way. That was illegal.
That's why I didn't do it.
Isn't what we're doing right now illegal?
Yes, but everybody agrees it's not a good idea to break the dungeon. I'm trying to understand it. Other people are trying to harvest it for money. You know, no one wins if it's broken.
Now, there's something I'd like to have a debate about.
Let's not. The discussion right now is about how the temple works, which is to say we don't know how, because some artisan built the thing, probably multiple artisans, and they all built these pillars in different ways. None of it is written down anywhere as far as we can tell. The society that built this thing is gone, perhaps because of the dungeon. What if it's not just a creature summoner? What if it's taking things from somewhere and putting them somewhere else? What if it transported that society? I don't know. We don't know. But in spite of not understanding the formula that makes the dungeon what it is, just like Gerald the dog, I believe it is possible that we could aberrate the mechanisms of the dungeon. That is what we've come to do this fine morning.
I thought you said no one wants to break the dungeon.
It's true. Nobody does. So this kind of research is very frowned upon, and is basically not ever sanctioned by anyone. That there is the motive, I believe, that drove someone to create that fog skeleton, and I also believe I understand the method by which they did it, in the broad strokes.
You just said you can't understand magic.
Well, of course, that's not 100% true, or otherwise, you could never teach it. I can't teach you exactly how to recreate Gerald the dog and have the same success as that comic's author did. But I could teach you to draw, just as I could teach you to cast spells, and you might make a very convincing imitation of Gerald the dog. I've been stuck in the book studying this place for ages, and I think I know exactly what I need to do to make my own, maybe not a fog skeleton, but a imitation of the idea.
But I don't want another fog skeleton. The last one turned my friend Tammy into gelatin.
Well, I've been thinking that through, and I don't believe we have to worry about that. By this point, Rutherford has been leading you guys down several flights of stairs. It maybe only just now occurs to you, but the walls are glowing. Before it was kind of a faint calming blue, but now it's more of a yellow. We're in the third floor, says Rutherford. We're lucky. Sometimes you can navigate your way around the dungeon without running into any pedestals, but at certain levels, and eventually, you just have to go through one. Out ahead of you is a large circular room with a pedestal in the middle. If we go in that room, we will trip off a pedestal, and it will summon a very big, angry lobster and a flying snake. If my theories are correct, we will instead summon a very overlarge lobster with wings and no legs.